Good morning, sir. Before we begin, first of all, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can.
And what is your name, sir?
James Wacek, W-A-C-E-K.
Okay, now would you be kind enough to put the CO3 on the phone for me? Good morning, sir. How are you doing today?
Just lovely. I'm glad to be here.
We are as well. I'm sorry to worry you, sir, but by chance, is it possible for us to get Mr. Borquez? That's B-O-R-Q-U-E-Z. First, is it possible?
Okay, yeah, we'll use this
one. Okay, and then you can bring in this gentleman next, but we have some attorneys and others who are here for them, so...
Okay, no problem, sir. Let me get my...
Okay, thank you so very much. We really appreciate it. And before we begin your hearing, what is your name, sir?
Arturo Borquez.
Okay, just hold on for just a moment. The person who will be leading your hearing this morning is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. So we're going to ask that you just hold on. And the next voice you will hear will be that of the Honorable Mr. David Neal. Thank you so much. And again, welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency.
Thank you.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, before we go too far, would you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
Arturo Sinoy Borges, 093187.
Thank you, sir. Before we really get started, I'm going to go to the list of people present in the room so I know who is and who are planning on speaking. So we have. Victim? Are you going to speak or?
Maybe.
Okay, that's fine. And then we have Elizabeth is reading, right?
Yes.
I don't know if this is a reading person.
Yes.
And from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and I know she's going to speak, and then we'll see Carmen and Lawrence. Do you wish to speak on behalf of Mr. Borquez?
Yes.
Okay. Well, right. So with that, I'm going to get started here. Sir, this is a parole hearing for you to have parole to the next consecutive sentence or an absolute discharge. I'm going to introduce the board members who are going to conduct your hearing at this time. To my very far left is Honorable Michael Johnson, to his left the Honorable Mayor Rittenhouse, to her left the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman. My name is David Neal, I'll be the hearing lead today. So we are going to go to some variety of some information. As I go through, I'll make sure that it sounds pretty correct. And then once we've gone through that, we will be going back to you for some information, and then we'll go to your supporters and then to the victim side, okay?
Okay.
Right, so you're currently 47, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you're serving, at this time, you're actually serving 10 concurrent life sentences. One is for kidnapping, one is for burglary, two counts of aggravated assault, two counts of armed robbery, three counts of sexual abuse, and one count of sexual assault. The purpose of today's hearing would be to determine whether we would grant you parole for the next consecutive sentence or grant you absolute discharge. The next consecutive sentence is a life sentence for kidnapping, and there is one other 1.5-year sentence that would be consecutive to the kidnapping. Does that sound about right, sir? It's a little confusing.
Yeah, I just don't know where the 1.5-year comes from.
There is a theft charge that I'm not sure. I think it's actually something that may have occurred while we're incarcerated, but it's at the very end, and it's only 1.5 years that it is consecutive to the kidnapping. The kidnapping term that you're trying to get thrown to. So, let's see, you became parole on July 31st, 2018, and but you were certified for this hearing for next consecutive sentence for absolute discharge on February 28, 2018. You've had one prior board hearing back in 1995, and I believe it was for commutation, and you were not recommended to the governor's office. Okay, so these are the basic details of the offense, and we can get by on that. So, at Chief of Los Angeles 91, you and a co-defendant brought two victims, hostage at knife point, and the indication that your co-conspirator may have had a handgun. You were both with items from Poland, and you were the sexual assault of the female victim. Juvenile was adjudicated in the juvenile court system, but the disposition didn't find it in our paper. Apparently, you went through the process and confessed your crimes, but when you were doing pre-sentencing, you started claiming that you were convicted based on pack lies. Is that true, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. So your criminal history is extensive in the beginning in 1983, I believe, in juvenile. You were arrested for things like assault, burglary, auto theft, and damage. During juvenile probation, it was noted by your PO that you were not compliant and should be reincarcerated. So apparently you didn't do well on probation while you were juvenile. As an adult, beginning in 1989, your criminal history continues with thefts, burglary, vehicle theft, failure to appear, as well as being on probation for theft at the time of after the theft sentence comes in. You're on probation for theft at the time of the instant offense. Revoked your probation unless you have the 1.5 years tacked on to the end of all these sentences. Your discipline has been moderate, but you've had many majors. You also have 5 drug-related major violations in the past 5 years, the most recent being in June 12th of 2017. You also had a minor from disrupting whatever in 2016. There were a couple other tickets in there last 5 years that were dismissed, but it seems that the 5 majors were all drug-related, either refusing UAs or possessions. You've had little programming with none since 2006. And we understand that as a lifer, you're not offered as many opportunities as some of the other inmates might. In our packet, there's no letters of support or things like that, but you have family members present in the boardroom today to speak on your behalf. Similarly, in the packet, there are no letters of opposition from the victim side, but there are victims. Victim and victim representatives present in the room. we have, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office is here appearing in opposition, plus we have a letter of opposition dated July 3rd, 2018. So, sir, that all sounds fairly correct?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Okay. So, at this time, since this is your, actually your first year of board hearing for parole, the board members don't know you, we're not all that familiar with your case and the offense. So now is an opportunity for you to attend to give some information, we'll be asking questions, try to get to know you a little bit. And so I'm gonna start out by asking you what was going on in your life when this occurred, and then give us an explanation or a description of the offense in a little more detail than the one I gave. Okay?
Okay. Well, at that time I was like 20 years old, young, dumb kid. My choice of drug back then was methamphetamines, coke, anything speed related. I stupid keep making stupid choices in life. You know, I mean, there's pretty much not much I can, you know, no more I can say about it. I'm just dumb kid making dumb choices. I had a drug problem. I don't know, I just really didn't have no sense of direction in my life at the time. And when I committed this crime, I don't even know what I was thinking. It sounded like it was planned. I just wanted to spur the moment, dumb choices to make, and I did it. I've been regretting it ever since. 27 years later, I'm still here paying for it, and I regret every moment of it. I can say I'm sorry, but that's not going to change the past, but I beat myself up more than anything. But, you know, because that's all I see in this place now. It's nothing but kids in here. The new generation coming in, just, it's embarrassing and shameful to see them come in, because at one time I was like that. But, you know, just, that's basically it.
So, I understand that during the offense, you were pretty much given the order. So you were the mastermind?
If that's how they're going to pay me. I mean, like I said, we're all just a bunch of kids back then. Me being a little bit older, I guess you could pay me that way.
Okay, well, when I say mastermind, I don't mean that as a sinister sort of thing, but you were the one that, once you got going, you pretty much control the situation until you left.
And, yeah.
Okay. So what went on during the offense?
Just tied up in there at night point, tied victims up and robbed them and left.
Well, seeing from, not only from the information in the packet, but your sentencing, but you did a little bit more than took property while they were tied up, at least for one victim. Were you doing other things when you were high that were to women that would be similar to that, or was it spur of the moment, or you think about it before you went in?
No, I wasn't in a thought going in, I don't think. And it's not something I do or did before or even thought about. I was just running, spurred my own thing, I guess. I guess I had been up for a few days at that point when this happened, on methamphetamines.
Okay. And, well, so normally at this point I'd ask you how long you've been sober, but with your history over the last 5 years, it seems like you still have a problem with drugs. Is that true, sir?
Well, now with the speed, the methamphetamines, that's been almost like 17 and a half years since I gave that up. The dirty ways came from, I used heroin, and the last one, that time I used it was like last year. haven't done nothing.
Okay.
My mom did that.
So you said you've been sober since last June when you got that ticket for, I think it was the running away, but the, and that was the last ticket that you got in that much of drug-related instances. So that's the last time you made that drug?
Yeah.
Okay. So was heroin a friend of yours for the 27 years you've been in, or did you clean it first, or what's the story on that?
No, I was paid for a while, but heroin was never really my thing. I got into it, I got addicted to it, I weaned myself off and got off of it. It never really was my thing. But, you know, I dabbled in it. I got addicted to it. I went through hell for 4 days to get off of it. And never touched it again.
Okay. I see that in 2006 you took a substance abuse education. Do they have NA and AA groups on your yard?
I haven't heard of them for a while in our yard. I just signed up for criminal and addictive thinking class and core skill classes. I just signed up for. I go on Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, I believe.
Okay.
But the NA and AA, I haven't really heard of any of them on the yard yet, not lately.
Okay, yeah, but they're not on every yard, but there are a lot of them out there. It's really good to get involved with that, because it not only helps you with addictions, drugs, alcohol, those kind of things, but it helps you clear your mind and to not do the self-destructive behavior that drugs and alcohol can do to you. Okay, you can destroy your own life without ever touching drugs or alcohol just by the way you make decisions. So when you get out, if you get out into society again, what's your plan? How do you plan on reintegrating with the community?
Well, I have a friend of mine who owns his own company, No Limit Concrete Construction. I have a job right there with him, but what I really wanted to do was go to that graphic art design school, get a degree in art, because I draw a lot. I like to draw. I've always been artistic, but that's what I really wanted to do, is work and go to school. My first grandson or grandbaby is going to be born here in December, and I just want to work and live the rest of my life out there instead of in here.
Okay. Well, this particular hearing would move you, if we granted you the next consecutive sentence, would put you in a position where you would only have that one sentence you're dealing with, and so you could, there is a possibility that you could earn parole back into the community. So it's like the drug, it's been a year, and I'm sure it's pretty tough. If you've got those kind of addictions or have those kind of addictions, especially heroin, not only to get off of it, but to stay off of it when you're in that kind of environment, I understand that. So where would you plan on staying? What would be your preference for where you stay if you were released to the community?
What do you mean, where?
Yeah,
at first I would say, with my sister, until I get on my feet and get my own place, but she's about the only support I really have during this whole time I've been locked up, and I would have to stay with her until I get on my feet, get a job, and I have a job already, but until I get my own place.
Okay. Have you given any consideration or tried to contact any of the groups that did better halfway houses, but they're not just a standard places there when they take you by application, and then if you were accepted, you would, you'd actually be under their control as well as your PO. Those kind of places, I know they go, they have ministries in the prisons and stuff like that, but it's also something, you know, if you can get working with those people ahead of time, they work with you while you're incarcerated to get yourself ready to be returned in society. And then if you're working with them when you get out there, they do a good job holding your hand as long as you're hating, until you get back on your feet. But that's something you might want to look into, is one of those. We're not supposed to recommend specific one or anything, but I hope that's kind of an idea here. So I'm going to go ahead and see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. Let's see. Well, fellow board members, do you have any questions right on Mr. Johnson? Oh.
So I asked, was that when I was looking at your record, what caused you to start to use heroin last year and the year before that, the last few years, 16, 17?
I don't know. Just somebody asked me to try it. And I know it's around me every day. I see it around every day. And I don't know, just one thing that did, I feel like, I couldn't really pinpoint a specific reason why. It could have been depression, it could have been, just pressure of this place. I really couldn't tell you exactly what made me do it.
So, in that period of time, I don't know what programs may be available to you on the yard, but have you taken, what steps or programs have you gotten into to keep you off the drugs?
It really wasn't any programs that did. It just something I got tired of doing, tired of feeling, and it's just like the methamphetamines. I got tired of one day and hadn't touched it in over 17 years and just got tired of it and just stopped. I just don't want it no more. It don't do nothing for me. It just breaks me down, and it's something I got tired of and I stopped. I mean, there's not too many programs you can go to where you really got support like you really need it.
Okay. So, just going back to the incident that happened, did you guys target that house, or what made you decide to go to that particular house?
I guess it was just like random.
Uh-huh.
They weren't really targeted. It just random walk of mine. I guess the area was dark, or the light was just like nobody's home, or they happened to be people there.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Dr. Ray.
Yes, back to the original offense, and I'm just following that follow up. Honorable Mr. Johnson, just now I asked you, sir, there were several of you, co-defendants, I believe, that participated in the original offense. Were you, were you all part of a game? Are you just friends? What was going on, sir?
I knew them all, except for the co-defendant. I barely met him like maybe a week or before that, and we're just cruising around the streets, and it wasn't really a gang, just a group of guys just cruising around the streets, and just happened to stop, say, go do this, and we did it, walked around the corner, and picked the house, and went from there. Just random act of stupidity.
The whole group, did y'all do any other criminal acts aside from just stopping at that house and the original offense? Was anything else? Did you do any other things while y'all were just driving around and having
a... I was just driving around. After that, I guess we split up and I went my way and they went whichever way they went. But no, we didn't go do anything else after that.
did you?
Well, before that.
Excuse me, sir. Well, what did you get at the house? Did you steal anything, or what was going on, sir? You went in there, you attacked these people, but did you take anything from the residence, or what happened?
I think so. I think VCR, I think. I don't know if there's jewelry or not, but I think a VCR or something was taken. I don't know exactly what it was, but something was that. I think VCR and something else.
Now, you stated that y'all split up after the offense. So who ended up with the goods? I mean, you know, the VCR or jewelry or whatever. Did you end up with that or one of the other participants ended up with the goods that were taken, sir?
I think they stayed in the guy's car, in Simon's car, and it was taken to Glendale somewhere to Scott Ruben Hernandez's house and sold for drugs.
Under ordinary circumstances, I'm going to ask this question, but I'm going to ask this one at any rate. Were all of you from the same community, the same nation when this offense took place, sir? I'm just curious. Were you all?
Also from Peoria, yeah.
And you knew all of you? You only knew one person, did you say, sir?
No, there was one that I had just met, my close friend, Richard Rosa.
Oh, you had just met him?
Yeah.
So how did he become part of your group, sir?
He was with the other guys already. And they came to him, I told him to ride, I wanted to go to Phoenix. And on the way to Phoenix, we stopped in Glendale. And that's when it happened.
Now, where were you coming from? You said you stopped in Glendale. Where were you coming from on your way to Phoenix? I mean, where did the trip originate from, sir?
We were in Peoria.
Okay, so you was in Peoria again. You were on your way to Phoenix, and so you got to Glendale, and you saw somebody decided to make a stop, and that's when the incident took place. Did I interpret that correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Do you remember how many was in the car, how many were participating in this, sir?
Besides me?
Yes, sir.
Four. Five altogether, including me.
Okay, sir. I guess you had, but I'll just ask it anyway, just for the record. I think you've already asked this for Mr. Neal, had you participated in any other criminal activities prior to this incident, sir?
No, sir.
This was your first time?
Yeah.
You were 20 years of age, around 20, something like that, and you had never been involved with the criminal justice system before, and so here you are, you and the other four, somehow, I can't quite comprehend it. You know, I was not there, some things you can't comprehend. I mean, you never participated before, you leave Peoria, end up in Glendale, and just see a house and say, well, we're going into that house and do whatever. Do you have any, what was really on your mind when that happened? You know, just driving along and say, oh, there's a house. And we'll stop there. What happened, sir? What really in your mind, sir?
I had been up for a couple of days, so I couldn't tell exactly what was going through my mind, but I just know he went through my mind, and I've been up for a few days on methamphetamines, and it just happened. It just stopped, and it's going to be a burglary. I wanted more drugs, and just
walked around
the corner and
picked
the house, and I
went
in.
So this is really the purpose of this, what you're telling the board now, the purpose of this was to get something, some items or some money to get some drugs. That was the reason for this incident, sir.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Now, how long have you been on methamphetamine at that time? I mean, did you start when you were, what, 10, 11 years old? Or you just started
no.
a drug before? When did you start on drugs?
You started about in 87, so I was about 16. That's about 16, about 87. That's when methamphetamine started hitting the scene, hitting the streets.
Okay, sir. Let me just ask one other question, sir. I'm skipping around now. Coming to where we are now, coming to today or what, last year, 2017. Why did you continue to use drugs at that time? Maybe at that point you did not know that you would be coming before this board at this time, but you knew at some point you would be coming before the board or and with the possibility of your being moved to the next consecutive sentence, which would eventually mean that you're out on the streets. So why did you decide to use drugs? I think you said, what did you say, you used heroin or something?
Heroin.
Why would you do that, sir? Why, sir?
I guess I was at a point in time where I just feel like I'm never going to get out. I'm getting depressed, and there's no excuse for it. I mean, maybe it was a means to escape the space for a little while, and before I knew it, I was addicted to it, and physically addicted to it. And, you know, just sometimes it's time, it beats on you. It breaks you down sometimes. I'm doing all this time, and there's no excuse. Just all I can think of, just time beating down on me and depression. Because when you first come down, you get this much time, you think, oh, I never gonna get out of prison. But hindsight is 2020, and I'm looking back now, it's like, man, I should have did things differently.
Yeah, you thought that you were going to never get out of prison after the opportunity came to use drugs. I guess at that time you were, what, 45, 46 years of age. You were still a young man, young person, so it seemed to me that you would have suspected, at least worked towards being ready to get outside, because it wasn't like that you were, and I'm not placing anything in terms of age. Well, like you were 7 years of age, you were still, you know, relatively a young person in your 40s, mid-40s, and you decided that you were going to use heroin. But this will be my final question. Now, you said that I believe that 4 days after you used the heroin, you weaned yourself off of heroin. How did you wean yourself off of it, sir? What did you do those 4 days? I think you used 4 days.
Yeah, 4 days to come down. It just went to the sickness. The diarrhea, the nausea, not eating, can't sleep. It was like hell going through it. Physically getting off heroin. When you get addicted to it, because I was going with a year straight without every day straight for a year. And I just got tired of doing that. So I had to wean myself off, do little, less and less and less until I find that I could bear going through it. Just through the sickness, the physical sickness. I just get insomnia, can't sleep, you can't eat, you can't hold nothing down. It's like the flu times two when you're going through that. But after that, they moved me from that area where I was on the yard to the other side of the yard, and I just stayed off it from that. I had to. I told myself, I'm never going to go through that sickness again.
So, for a whole year?
I did.
You did it. So, since June of last year, you never used any more heroin. That's what you're telling the boy. That's what you told Honorable Mr. Neal. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir. And when I moved to the other side, I wrote the deputy warden, Patrell, and I told her, put me on every UA list. Every UA turnout list they want you. And I'll be waiting for them every day if they want. Because I was trying to get my business back and this and that. I wrote her two facts. I never got a response back. But like I said, they can UA me anytime they want to. I'll be happy to UA for them.
Okay, sir. Well, thank you so very much for speaking with me, and thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you,
Dr. Wright.
Any other questions, Mr. Neal? Okay, so I think at this time, we're going to go to your supporters and allow them an opportunity to speak on your behalf. So you stay on the phone and go from there. Would you ever want me to like to speak first to come forward to the podium? Yes, sir. Is that green light on by the base?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you state your name, sir?
My name is Lawrence Borges. I'm his younger brother. And I just like to say, if he does have a chance to come back out, I believe he's, you know, he's a grown up now. He's paid for what he's done. I can't speak for him like that. But if he does come out, he has a secure job. And I know of places like Church on the Street and stuff like that. I can help get him into that, and they'll keep him there instead of just releasing him straight if it were to happen. I know of places, my wife and I, we own a salon, so he can always work with us and he can live there. He can come work with us. My wife and I go to church, he can come with us. So we know of those places that would accept him and help him and hopefully guide him in the right direction, because I myself got in trouble and now I'm on the right path. You know, it can be done. I did drugs and I changed my life, and I hope he can too. It's possible with God. I've done a lot of things, but now I'm on the right path. And with our support, I believe he can do that too, if he really wants to. But it's up to him, whatever he's going to do if he gets out. And all we can do is help him. And we're here for him. And hopefully he'll come to church with us, my wife and I. And my sister, we all go to church together. And she helps me. She's a real strong support. She'll help him a lot. And hopefully we can, you know, move forward with our lives, all of us, and the victims as well, hopefully.
Okay, so you were fully aware of yourself because you've been there, but
yes,
so, you know, a lot of people say, well, everybody's going to help me. And you get to go to sport, but if you don't make that decision,
I did it myself. Yes. I prayed to God. I welcomed him in my life. And that's how it's done.
Yeah, that's
and
that's an important
it's
lesson that a lot of people in their life never learn. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You make the decision.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, he can only do it for himself. All we can do is pray and hope that he accepts the Lord in his life, because he ain't going to do it. He's going to do whatever he wants, obviously. And we're here to support him. You know, hopefully I can help get him into one of those Church on the Street programs. My wife's very good at it. She knows a lot of them. So,
I'd like to commend you for your success.
Thank you.
Any questions from the floor? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Carmen Castro, and he's my brother. And I have seen him over the years change, just from that different kid, like he said, young and dumb, making bad choices. And, you know, I was never there with my brothers. I think maybe it was a part of being, now that I'm a mom, my husband and I have 7 kids together as a blended family, but being a mom now, knowing you need a support system, like my husband, and we didn't have that. You know, he was probably, I was 7 when our mom passed away, and he was probably 10, very close to her. My dad never remarried, and I just know now that's just, he needs the support as family. That's what, you know, that's how he's going to survive. My husband's a big, big supporter of us as a family going to church, and he would definitely stay with us, and we have a big house, and there's a place for him always, and I just see the difference in him, visiting him, talking to him, his letters, and like you said, he is an awesome artist. He's like every day drawing, and he draws the kids birthday cards, and that's his dream, that's what he wants to do, is to, you know, move forward, and I know that he's sorry for what he's done, and I'm sorry for what he's done, but I think we need to move forward, and with us having him there, and we would support him, I think he could do it, you know. I definitely think he can move forward.
Any questions from the board? No questions? Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Wharton, we're going to move to the prosecutor and victims at this time. I'm not sure. I'll let them decide who would like to speak first. And
hi, my name is Kathy Shepherd. I was in the house 27 years ago when this happened. I was the female victim. It was terrifying. At the time when I got the letter, well, I got a letter five years after he'd been in and wrote a strong letter that he shouldn't be let out then. And I still feel that way. When I got the letter this last week, it terrified me, to be honest with you. I was still afraid and felt like if he was let go, I would have to move. I'm a physical therapist. I work with children in the community. My husband works in construction in the community. Our children are grown now. They were in the house the night that that happened. They were 7 and 3 and are grown and have their own kids and jobs now. But I'm still very afraid that if he were to be let out, that he would hold us responsible for him being in prison for all these years, and that I really feel like I would have to move. So I just want you to know that I'm still very concerned for myself and my husband, and my preference would be that he stays. So.
Are you still in the same house?
No.
And I stay in the same house for 30 years, so.
Oh, no, we've been in the house we're in now for a long time, but yeah. Not in the same house.
Yeah, not the same house.
No.
I mean, okay. Any questions from the board? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank
you for appearing today.
If I could just have one moment. Good morning, I'm Elizabeth Reamer. I am a prosecutor at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office in the Sex Crimes Unit. The state's position is that the sentence the defendant imposed is not clearly excessive and that the defendant should serve the remainder of the sentence and not be given the opportunity to move forward. One point of clarification, there was just a question by board member Neal about whether the victim and her husband remain in the house that this crime happened in. They moved shortly thereafter because of this. So although they are not there now, it did disrupt their life in every way possible, to include the fact that they needed to uproot their family because of their safety concerns. I can't speak for men, but this is every woman's worst nightmare. This is why women are scared. Women are terrified in their own home because of not only people like this man, but because of this man specifically. I don't know if men feel that way when they're home alone, that they're terrified someone's going to break in and rape them, but women are. And the reason that women are is because it happens. And the people that do this are this man. Not only did he come into the home to steal from them, but he bound them. He said to you he thought no one was home. The facts of this case are that he cut the electricity from the outside. The male victim wasn't quite sure what was going on, so went outside to look, and then stumbled upon this man, who bound him, who forced him back into his own home where his wife and children were, and then bound his wife, and then raped his wife,
and forced him to yank the phone out of the wall so that it could not be used to call 911. The way 911 was in the end contacted was by the male victim going next door to call 911. Remember that this was in 1991, there were no cell phones. Someone being bound and raped in their home deserves that perpetrator to receive the sentence that this man received. There was a question to him about whether he had any contact with the system prior to this case, and he said no. That is confusing, considering the fact that he has a lengthy juvenile history and was in fact on probation in the adult system when he did this. He told you he did not have contact with the system. He was on probation. There was discussion earlier about where the extra year and a half came from. That extra year and a half came from the probation count that he was on when he did this. This case went to trial. I know that because this is not a situation where the man before you took responsibility for his actions. That trial is his constitutional right. That trial required the victim and her husband to testify, to say in front of him what happened, for the female that you just heard from to talk about being sexually assaulted by him in a courtroom full of strangers and in front of the man that raped her. That is what the system is set up to require. I'm not asking that you punish the defendant because the system worked the way that it should. But I know that he did not take responsibility, and that by not taking responsibility, it put this family in a situation of further victimization because they had to testify. The defendant said at the point of being held responsible for his actions that he didn't do them and that the confession wasn't correct. I will note that he did confess to these crimes, and I will note that his co-defendant said that they did these things. And it was only after he was to be sentenced to be held responsible for this heinous and awful thing that he decided to backtrack and say he didn't do it. I will also note that that 16-year-old, the co-defendant, pled the fifth in trial, refused to cooperate, and was incarcerated for failing to comply with the court order, for essentially being in contempt for not having the willingness to testify in this man's trial. That 16-year-old was incarcerated, chose to be jailed over testifying against the man before you today. So what you have is victims who continue to be terrified, and rightly so, and also his co-defendant so terrified that he would prefer to be jailed over testify against him. At no point did he own his behavior today. He owned it only when the police talked to him about it, but not later. And certainly not all these years down the line. Of course, admitting what you have done is the first and most required step for change. And we don't have that here. At the point that you admit what you've done, there are many, many, many steps that you have to put into place before you change who you are. But we're not, in this case, even at step one. There has been mention of the fact that while this man has been incarcerated, he has incurred 48 disciplinary infractions, including throwing objects, obstructing staff, giving and receiving tattoos, disobeying orders, possessing or manufacturing a weapon, theft, possessing contraband, destruction of property, sexual acts, stalking, possessing and manufacturing drugs, conspiracy, tampering, disrespect, being in an unauthorized area, tampering with security devices, refusing a job assignment, disobeying verbal or written orders, possessing drug paraphernalia, and being disruptive to the level that it became an infraction. That is who this man is. He is someone who could not remain crime-free in the community, and someone who refuses to remain crime-free while in incarceration. The state is not going to dispute that the defendant in this case doesn't have as many opportunities within DOC as maybe some other inmates do to take advantage of resources, etc. But at the end of the day, this falls on you as a human being to decide who you are. It falls on you to decide what you want to do with your life, how you want to proceed. And what we know from this man's history is that he continues to make the wrong choices. We know what he is capable outside of custody because of his record. We know what he is capable inside of custody because of his record. This is not a man that deserves a break in his sentence. He continues to use drugs, and that is a problem. The state asks that you add that to the list of problems that he has, the total to a point where he does not deserve a break in his sentence. He has no business in the community. We know what he does when he is in the community. He was violent then. There was violence on his record in incarceration, and therefore we know that he has not changed. He said to you that he was a stupid kid making stupid choices. That is the quote that he said to you. He sexually assaulted a stranger in her own home after he bound her and ripped her clothes off. That is not a stupid choice. That is a catastrophic choice. That is a devastating choice. It is a choice that forever altered that family's life. That is a choice that injected terror into a family. A drug problem, I want to make very clear, does not make a rapist. A child who doesn't have the support system he should, which I am not minimizing, does not make a rapist. A person who rapes is a rapist. A drug problem is a beast. And I will not minimize the struggle that happens when you become addicted to drugs and you try to right yourself. But again, drugs do not make a rapist. The inmate said to you, hindsight is 20/20, and that he should have done things differently. I think we can all agree that this shouldn't have played out the way that it did. But the person that chose the way this played out is the man before you. The person that decided to rape is now before you saying, well, I haven't been able to stay clean, I haven't been able to stay out of sexual offenses, being on my record in DOC, I haven't stopped stealing from people, I haven't stopped using drugs. So the hindsight that he wants you to consider is proven through his actions not to be true. Again, he told you that it looks like no one was home. I'll reiterate that the lights were on and that he cut the power so that the lights would go off. He said that he didn't really have a plan and he wasn't really sure what was taken. He mentioned that he thought maybe some jewelry and maybe a VCR, and then after that they went to someone else's house and used that property for drugs. To say before you that he's been thinking about this and he has so much regret and he wishes things had been differently and he was just a kid, while simultaneously telling you that he can't really even remember the facts and he's not really sure what he did, is inconsistent with the suggestion that he has owned what he did, that he acknowledges and takes in what he did and will not make that same mistake again. How can he do that if he's not even concerned enough with what he did that he can remember it? a fact here is that these two people were caught in large part because they pawned the jewelry. That's what they did. I will also point out that they were members of the Dogtown Gang, which is something that the police investigated and came up in the trial. I want to take a moment to talk to you about deviant sexual behavior, which is what I deal with all day, every day in my job as a sex crimes prosecutor. A deviant sexual act is acting out on a sexual interest in a prepubescent child. Being attracted to someone prepubescent is deviant. That's what a pedophile is. I will note that a sexual deviance has an onset of puberty. That is what we know from the studies, and that is what we know from the literature. The good thing about that is that you're not going to wake up at age 50 suddenly attracted to underage children. You become attracted to underage children, if at all, at the onset of puberty. You may not act out on it until you're 50, but it has an onset when you're young. Another sexual deviance is violent sexual behavior. A violent rapist is someone with a deviant sexual interest that has an onset of puberty. What we have here is a man who has a deviant sexual interest that he acted out on at 20, 21 years old. The reason I bring this up is that it is not consistent with the literature and the studies that this man woke up this day, decided to break into a home he thought was empty, he thought no one was home, so acted the way he did, which is to cut the electricity, which was on, I'll point out, to enter that home, bind people, and then just because he could, rape one of them. That's not how this works. Perhaps it was his first opportunity. But he didn't wake up that day with the sexual deviance. He already had the sexual deviance. And he found a way to act out on it. And he did that to the detriment of the victim in this case, who now has to live the rest of her life knowing that he bound her. He bound her husband. Her children, including a three-year-old, were in that home. That he ripped her clothes off, touched her with his hands, performed oral sex on her, in her home, bound, with no phone access, with no electricity, and with her children upstairs. That is a deviant sexual act. Drugs do not make someone deviant in a sexual way. Alcohol does not make someone deviant in a sexual way. So what you have before you is a deviant sexual predator who has received little to no counseling for his drug addiction, which he's blaming for this. And apparently no help in terms of the deviant sexual interest that caused him to be in this place in the first place. So he is as much a danger now as he was then. We know he was a danger then because of what he did, and nothing has changed. If you were to move the defendant to the next sentence, what you would be saying to the victim before you is that that one act of sexual assault wasn't bad enough to warrant the sentence the legislature deems appropriate for that act. What you would be saying is, it's not as bad as some other sexual assaults you may see. And therefore, he doesn't deserve the punishment that those other people do. And what I would submit to you is that that's not true. That if you were to think about what it would be like to be in your own home, bound in your own home, and raped in your own home, what sentence is appropriate for that? And the state state submits to you that the sentence he received post-trial is the sentence that he deserves, the sentence that is warranted, and that nothing that you heard or saw today changes that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? No questions? Thank you. Is there anything else, anybody else on the victim side that would like to say anything else? Okay, thank you. Okay, so Mr. Wilkins, we've heard from you, we've heard from your supporters, and we've heard from the prosecutor and the victim. So we're nearing the end of your hearing, and the board will go into discussion in a couple of moments to make a determination. But before we do that, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement if you would like to. Anything else you think we might need to know that would help us make an educated decision? We just ask that you don't repeat all the information that we've gone over already as a time management issue. So is there anything else you'd like to tell the board at this time, sir?
Not that I can really think of right now.
Okay. No, not that I can think of right now. Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Okay, the board will be going into discussion. You stay on the phone. We ask you to remain silent while we're in discussion, but you can hear the entire conversation that the board has and what our decision is. But once we make a decision, I'll get back with you, okay?
Okay.
All right, the board is now in discussion. Well, this case is definitely unfortunate, tragic. And when I say interesting, I have a lot of issues that need to be considered making a decision, not interesting like a history lesson. But first of all, I have to say that I believe the term that was then made and being used now for this type of offense, the overall type of offense, of the home invasion. Not a burglary or anything like that, with home invasion. And that's a pretty scary situation for any homeowner or women, the occupants to be in. And I can see where on the side of the female victim, where it's going to instill tremendous fears for the rest of her life. It's absolutely not easy at all to move on with your life after something like that happened. The fact that the one suspect went out of the house looking for different things to steal while it's jewelry, and that the jewelry was taken right off the victim while she was being victimized. But I have to go back to the lack of programming and everything for the drug issues. There may not be an AA available in the yard, but I think that there would be the ability, if he put the effort into it, to get more programming that he's had on all subjects, and especially he should be getting more on drugs. And I believe he should have more than just drug abuse. He should have sexual abuse, sex offender type courses. There again, I don't know what's available in HR, but something like the SOETP program, those kind of things he really should have. He's been incarcerated a long time, but he also has pointed out some sexual issues while he was in. They do happen, they just don't happen all that often, or they don't get caught and correct that often. And then I go back to Mr. Burke's his presentation attitude. I just have to agree, I just don't see that ownership of the crime. I also have a real concern that, a year out from his first parole hearing, that he would not know that he's going to have parole hearing, and he would be still using drugs. I'm just, I don't know, but then the issue of lifting comes back up, and she stated when she got the letter, she may be terrified of you. Unfortunately, now it does come like 26 year mark has hit. If Mr. Rebecca stays on the sentencing zone, every 6 to 12 months it's going to happen again. If he was moving to the next and second sentence, it would be a considerable longer time than being of assistance to the victim and not having to face this that often. But in my experience of working with victims, usually they prefer to see them stay in the sentence so that they get the maximum punishment. And that's one of the pretty questions is what would be proper, what would be compassionate. But at this time, I'm just not comfortable with a form of any type of announcement discharge on any of these charges. There's 11 charges convicted by a jury, so whether or not the evidence enough to show the severity of it. The sentencing shows me that the judge wanted to show the compassion, but he was not interested in any kind of urgent release. So, but I'd like to start the discussion there and see what my fellow board members might have to say. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I'll just be brief. When you initially asked Mr. Borges for a description of what happened that day, he never even mentioned that he sexually assaulted a woman. And that says to me he doesn't even acknowledge that happened. So I'm not in support of any kind of release.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
I agree. I'm not supportive of parole to his next consecutive sentence. I tell you, I really have to see him. He was doing drugs while he was in prison, 2016, 2017. He says he was on heroin, that he got off of it, but he just says he got tired of using it. But I think that he needs to hopefully, you know, continue to stay off of it and get into any programs that he may get into while he's in there, whether it's just AA and NA when he's going to something. But that's just within a year that he's been using heroin. That's a little bit of a problem for me.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Dr. Wright?
I don't think he's shown any remorse towards the victim, and I think that that's very important in a case like this. And I think that his use of drugs, his use of not even admitting what happened. And I'm saying, Tilton, providing this board with, I'm going to be wearing professional with misinformation. We cannot tolerate that. Therefore, I'm not in favor of promoting him to his next consecutive sentence or anything else at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Well, one thing I did want to mention, it's a follow-up. When I asked about his contact with the system prior to this, and he said, you know, I had already delineated quite a few offenses as a juvenile, quite a few as an adult, and in fact, he was on probation at the time of the offense, and, you know, he just, I haven't heard kind of believing that the drugs from back then would wipe that much information out of your thinking. So based on all the testimony, information, everything that we've had this morning, I'm going to make a motion to deny Mr. Arturo Velocas, 87-09-3187, to deny parole to next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge at this time. I'm also going to ask for 1 year of set off, and that would be my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, seconded by Ms. Rittenhouse, agreed by Dr. Wright and Mr. Johnson. And the reasons will be a serious and viable offense, serious and deadly offense, trauma to the victim, And technically, the two women and children were victims upstairs, although they fortunately stayed asleep and weren't hurt. So the danger of victims, multiple victims, victim harassment, violating previous probation or parole, history of continued substance abuse, violent criminal history, poor institutional behavior, and even though it was year-long with drugs, that's a recent disciplinary infraction, lack of programming. And is there anything else that this one needs to move in like that? So, Mr. Borkins, you confirm the termination the board has voted to deny you or go the next consecutive sentence or after your discharge at this time? Did you hear all of the reasons that I listed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, this will end your hearing. We wish you the best of luck. And in about a year, the Department of Corrections will certify for another board hearing. You'll be able to come back and see what kind of improvements you've made. And this was your hearing. Thank you for appearing, sir. Would you put the CO3 back on the phone?
Okay.